The only thing longer than the title is the introductory song, and the opening credits, and the introduction of every major character, and the duration of each individual scene, and the runtime of the extended version. Listen, it's a lot of movie. And it's a mad, 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 mad world, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, my name's Sean. I'm here with two people worshiping the wrong Canaanite. It's Robin Hitchcock.
I'm not the Messiah.
And Camila Adams.
I am not either.
Do I have Canaan right? Jerusalem part of Canaan? That can't be right.
I was raised without religion. I don't know these things unless they made it into some kind of claymation special.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Don't add us. We don't care. not to disparage anyone's faith. It's just if you're worried about the geography, come on. Last time was Monty Python's Life of Brian. 43 2/3. Apparently, we just like not liking old comedies. This follows Blazing Saddles, 48 2/3. Oh God, You Devil, 35 1/3. Beverly Hills Cop 2, 57. Listen, comedy doesn't always age.
No, I forgot we watched Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah. So did a whole episode on it.
And if somebody were to ask me today, if
that was the deep pandemic. That was a rough time. It's fair to have repressed it.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely some 2020 episodes where I'm like, really? We did. Let's go. Let's take a quiz. Let's throw this together. The Magnificent Seven remake. We did an episode.
I remember that one.
I remember you calling What's-Her-Face Jennifer Lorish.
Yeah. TMNT, the cartoon of Ninja Turtles.
Which I weirdly like.
What else did we do in there? The Nun. Every now and then I remember we did The Nun. Chronicle. The original Police Academy. We got out of the way somewhere in there.
Jeez.
Yeah, we've done some episodes.
Yeah, I forgot about Police Academy.
But none of them have been as old or as long, I think, as It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
What year is this?
1963.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't gone past that.
Our earliest previous film was Fiddler on the Roof from 71, and it was only on our list because of a 79 re-release. When is the last time It's a Mad, 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 Mad World topped the box office?
64.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was not a re-release situation.
No.
Anybody would ever re-release this in theaters.
Oh, well, you would be shocked at how much money this made.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm not saying like money-wise. I'm sure.
Right.
I'm absolutely sure that this made some moolah, but I just don't see like past that time period.
Being like, let's do that again.
Yeah. Mm. It's just because it's very specific in its time, just for the cast in itself.
Even, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but even like some of the big recognizable cameos of people I know, I didn't recognize.
Jack Benny was in it? When did that happen?
even Jerry Lewis.
Oh, I also miss Jerry Lewis.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Because, look, in 1963, everyone's just a white guy with a hat. Like, it's an old-timey guy. And if you're not, okay, the Three Stooges look different. Other than that, all the rest of them, it's just like, here's a guy, here's another guy, here's another guy, here's another guy. And if you're not trained to be like, is this guy Jerry Lewis? You're just going to be like, there was a guy in the car.
Right,
you know, it's
it took me forever to like, I was like Sid Caesar. I was like, I know this face.
Yes.
I know this guy's face. Like, who is he? And then I look him up and there's like an old fucking decrepit picture of him up on Google.
Right.
Like when you Google him, I was like, that's not helpful. And then I go through the filmography and it's like, oh, he's the coach from Greece.
Oh, I love that. That's why you know Sid Caesar.
Like, what is Milton Berle doing standing upright? That's not how I remember him.
But I did catch Mr. Roper and Mr. Furley from Three's Company. Don Knotts is obviously like he's right. very recognizable. But Mr. Roper, I was surprised because I had never seen him in anything other than Mr. Roper.
I just had to keep, like, especially for the first hour, I just pausing it and like going back to Wikipedia and going, okay, I need to combine what this face looks like with the name of the person who I may or may not associate with it and what they're doing in this movie. Just constantly trying to be, okay, all right, I know who Mickey Rooney is and I know the name Buddy Hackett. Now right. I know what Buddy Hackett looks like.
I like how many, I might just be Buddy Hackett and Terry Thomas, but the, just like, wait, which Disney voice did this person do? Because that's what, how I know all
what are they for those two?
Well, Buddy Hackett, and I think he did a bunch, but the one that I know him from is Scuttle from The Little Mermaid.
Mm.
And, you know, if you heard last week, you know that childhood Robin loved It's a Mad, Mad,
right,
Mad,
right.
Mad World. And I very clearly remember the first time I watched it, recognizing Buddy Hackett's voice.
Oh, wow.
And I said, like, is that Scuttle? And my mom was like, you are my daughter. Because she was always, both my parents, but especially my mom, was always very good at recognizing actors.
Nice.
Specifically by their voices. Like, right. their faces help, but the voice was always how she did it. And she was very proud of me. And then Terry Thomas was Sir Hiss in Robin Hood.
Oh. I have bad recall and face blindness, so this was a challenging film.
Oh, sure, sure.
Before we get too ahead of ourselves, and we went over the history, this was childhood Robin's favorite film.
Nope.
Camila and I had never seen it. No. So that's that.
When I say it was my favorite film as a child, it was like a phase I went through first or second grade.
In the phase period.
Correct.
Which is something that nobody talks about, is until you're like eight, you have a movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, mine was like either Red Dawn or Red Sonja.
Wow.
Like, yeah, wait, yeah, one of
they're
those.
They're very different.
I know both of them were like...
You went through multiple red blank
Yeah,
faces.
Exactly.
So. I'm like, the Wizard of Oz and the Sandlot. You're fighting the communists. Jeez.
And I think Romance in the Stone was also in there.
Oh, God, I love that. Because
it was like
movie.
Whatever was like playing on Showtime.
Right.
Yeah.
All summer.
Yeah.
Well... Somehow we have to tell you what happens in this movie.
I don't even. Good luck, Camila.
I mean, listen, if you go vague, it's
right,
not that
yeah,
difficult.
Yeah, it's just, right. That's
you can cover the beginning and the end, and then in the middle,
right.
hijinks ensue.
Yeah.
Let's see if that's the move. As Camila gives you a 60-second recap, which is just enough time to say the title of the film. And go.
Eight strangers on different paths witness a car crash. Five of the dudes get out to see if he's okay. He's not. He tells them about $350,000 he's got hidden in Santa Rosa under a big W. And then he literally kicks a bucket and then dies. The cops were chasing him. They arrive and ask questions. They don't tell them about the money and they go on their way. They all plan to find the money and then decide to work together to split it. The cops know dude has money stashed somewhere, so they keep close tabs on the group so they can find the money too. There's more car crashes, switching modes of transportation, random cameos, a dance party, an annoying mother-in-law, alliances made and broken, madcap shenanigans. Chief Culpepper, in the meantime, has had like a breakdown because of problems at home and at work, and he decides to go for the money too. More people get involved to learn about the treasure, and everybody's all for it. They find it. Nobody really gets it because they all end up broken and broke because nobody got the money.
Yeah. Congratulations. 46 seconds.
In more detail than I expected.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, I would not have done that.
I was like, you know what?
I would have hijinks ensued.
Yeah, like the Culpepper thing was important.
It's so weird because, you know, he's
Spencer Tracy
is first billed.
Right.
And was the most important movie star in
yeah.
the film,
sure.
right? Like, or you know what I mean? He was a movie star,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Spencer Tracy.
Right. A lot of these people are TV and stage people.
Right.
And
he could be in his own movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit of like Russell Crowe in American Gangster Syndrome, where it's like, you have your own thing going
right.
on. And he has like those weird, random, somewhat serious scenes.
Yeah.
Like that one scene towards the end when him and one of the boring women, like when she's like, I could have escaped this loveless marriage. And I was like, whoa!
What?
That's got, I mean, speaking of how specific it is, that's got to be like a visual or textual reference to a particular Spencer Tracy romance that we're not aware of. Maybe.
It could be. And I feel like there's like probably a whole layer of things like that in there that
yeah.
we
yeah.
are that's going completely over our heads. Because I think there was, I forget what it was, but something happened. And it was like, it seemed to me like it was a shout out to something else that they had done. Somebody had done.
I also don't know what you're talking about. But there was definitely a moment where people mugged at the camera after something happened that I kind of was like, I don't get it.
Right.
And I was like, is this like the kicking the bucket joke? Like, this movie's so dumb and I love it. Like, it was like something like that, and then they all mugged at the camera. Right. So I'm not sure if it was like an expression I'm unfamiliar with. I wish I remembered what we are both talking about.
Me too.
There's so much in this movie.
It's chaos. It's fucking chaos.
And then also watching it for me, because I haven't seen it since I was a kid, and it's that thing when you watch a movie that you've watched a million times but you haven't watched in a long time where, like, right before something happens, you go, oh, yeah.
Right. Right.
So, like, the fire escape thing, I think I thought that that was a different movie. Do you know how sometimes that happens?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's the movie where everybody's on the fire escape and it falls down.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a lot of that stuff because this movie's 3 hours long.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you about it. The facts are shorter than usual because I was on vacation and didn't write as many. Also, shouldn't something here be short? It's a mad, 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 mad world. It's four, if you're trying to remember, four Mads. Premiered at the Cinerama Dome in L.A. on November 7th, 1963. A slow rollout from there. It first went to number one on Christmas weekend of that year. And then it kind of bopped around the top of the chart well into the next year, winning the weekends of February 26th, March 18th, April 1st, and April 8th. As well. We're so far back. I mean, this is 49 years ago. So the farther back you go, the fewer numbers there are.
59 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say.
59 years ago. Yeah. Excuse me. 60th anniversary screenings coming to a Fathom Events near you next year, I'm sure. It was most likely the third top grossing film of 1963, behind only Cleopatra and How the West Was Won. Some old data puts it at about $46 million domestic, another $14 million overseas. $46 million is a lot of money in 1963. Yeah. Translates around $450 million today.
Wow.
Yeah, the big hit. In fact, Box Office Mojo currently has this 95th all-time on the inflation-adjusted list.
Wow.
So this was huge.
Yeah.
And hyped accordingly, as the trailer indicated. Play the beginning of the trailer. Beep.
A United Airlines jet lands in Los Angeles, launching the biggest entertainment airlift in motion picture history. The world's press, some 300 newsmen from four continents, arrive for the Hollywood premiere of Stanley Kramer's
The trailer starts with them going like, this movie's fucking huge. We flew in every film critic on a big ass plane to see how big this big movie is.
It's kind of like what they did with Papillon also, where it's like, I think they really were, and also you think about Cleopatra, like they really were selling movies at this time as excess. Right.
Yeah.
As we made this as big as possible and therefore you must see it, which I mean, that's what Endgame is. Right.
No, that's true.
We're not, we can't look back on this with like weird. We still do it to a certain extent.
No. And I think I saw somewhere that this movement, as well as stuff like Cleopatra and some of the biblical epics we were talking about last week, were that people were buying TVs and staying home.
Oh,
so they made big, grand stuff like this.
Kind of similar to our current moment.
Yeah.
Right.
How do we get people to not watch this on streaming? We make it absurdly giant.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's some weird technical fact about this. This was in Cinerama's 70 millimeter, the really long picture, right? Apparently before then, those movies were filmed on three cameras.
Yes.
Like one was pointing left, one was pointing right, and one was pointing middle. And and so they were projected through three thingies, and the sides basically just had the sides. And this was the first movie that used a really wide camera, and it was one really wide
the
picture.
The first one?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought the Criterion collection of this.
I was wondering, because I got it from the library, the DVD.
Was it the Criterion one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's fancy.
It is.
I do think it's funny because the Yves Bayou Criterion is coming out in October, and I've never bought a Criterion before because I don't make a lot of money and they're expensive.
The only one I own is the Night of the Hunter.
Good choice. Love that. I love that movie.
I own many.
Yes. That is what I'm trying to avoid.
Right.
But when I saw Eve's Body, it was coming out. I'm like, well, I must own it.
Yeah, obviously.
And I was like, and a good one to break my seal on. You know?
Right.
And then I bought this and lost my Criterion virginity to It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Mm-hmm.
Is that the one you really wanted to?
I've been falling asleep to episodes of the OC, and I compared it to when Marissa has sex with Luke when Ryan rejects her.
I've lost the thread of this metaphor.
There's so many things in that sentence.
She chooses the wrong person to lose her virginity to. She chooses the mediocre, boring guy.
Holding out for Eve.
But I'm sure I'm sure it's a lovely set.
Well, I'm really glad I did, because it helps elucidate some of the what is going on here. And I'll share more about it, but specifically I brought it up because of the restoration. They did a restoration of the 202 minute version. And I didn't watch that full thing because A, it's 202 minutes. B, it didn't have subtitles. The main version did, and I was like, I don't have time for this. And then thirdly, it's one of those restorations where they're like, we wanted to include every possible thing, even if it sucks. And part of what their problem was is that the Laserdisc scan was not 70 millimeters. So then they had a color layer with desaturated edges from the 70 millimeter print. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's something called vinegar syndrome. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah. No. And there's a releasing label called Vinegar Syndrome playing off of that.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. So it's something where a film loses its color and gets magenta colored. It was a very interesting documentary. There are parts of it with still photographs and audio. There are parts of it with subtitles and no audio. They really were we are
give it all
piecing
got.
This together right. best. Yeah. It's like a broken vase. What's that thing where you put the broken vase together with gold?
Oh, I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
that was just explained to me in a movie that I saw. Right, and I remember.
I bet I also watched that
probably.
Movie. Yeah,
this happens at a hilarious level on specialty horror releasing, which is a huge thing. And there's all of the Vinegar Syndrome is one, Arrow Video, Severin Films does that kind of process for obscure, sometimes awful, horror movies from the 70s and 80s, and the parts of those movies that have survived intact will look gorgeous. They'll be like a 2K, if not 4K transfer from a beautifully preserved reel. And they'll put that little disclaimer, portions of this were recovered from less than ideal elements. So you'll be watching a crystal clear Blu-ray, and then it will look like, you know, a VHS that someone dubbed off of another VHS in the AV club room. And it just cuts in and you can't see anything for 4 minutes, and then it cuts back. Huh. I was hoping you watched the original version, but I don't wanna. So
I would have. Honestly, the thing that held me back was subtitles, because
why did you need to watch the subtitles?
That's just how I watch everything. And you get really used to it.
Gotcha.
I go to open subtitle movies when I can.
Huh.
It helps me know what they're saying.
Okay.
It does.
What they're there for.
Lost my hearing yet, but it's only a matter of time, you know.
But like you said, if you get used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Continue with facts. You have more facts.
Hey, why not some more facts? Where were we? That it's the 95th top grossing film of all time. Right behind Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which we probably saw.
One of those.
No idea.
Allegedly, though, this was so expensive to make and market that the profit was less than $2 million, because they spent so much damn money. Well, you saw
on the cast.
And there were clearly, we went around the world marketing this film we had already made.
Right.
A word on those lengths. Robin already alluded to some of this. The original director's cut, 3 hours and 22 minutes. MGM quite correctly said, settle down, buddy. To which Stanley Kramer only cut 10 minutes out for the premiere, brought it down to 312. Over his objections, they continued to cut it, resulting in the breakneck pace of the 2 hour, 41 minute version that we saw. And that is, if you watch it anywhere but that Criterion, that's what you saw. The only other existing complete version is the one on Criterion that was completed in 2004, which is at 317. So they got most of the original.
The laser disc has some.
The laser disc has some stuff.
Yeah.
If you want to be that level of nerd, and I'm not ruling it out for my future.
I was just going to say, there's only a matter of time until Sean becomes a laser disc collector.
Expensive baubles.
Oh my goodness.
Nominated for 6 Oscars, winning one. You're not going to get all of it because it's getting obscure. The song was nominated.
Okay.
Fucking hated that song. Why do they sing a whole ass song which sounds like it's ending 12 times?
It really does.
Over a black screen and then go to the animated credit. Can we at least combine those two things?
Listen, I thought there was something wrong with my with the DVD.
I know.
I was like, what's happening?
It's the overture, y'all.
No, I want visuals, dude.
You're supposed to be coming to your seats during that portion.
Yes, and I've seen that before, and they put a big fucking card on the screen that says overture. Yes,
it did need that, because they have it for the entree.
Right,
Yeah.
That I did at the roadshow screenings during that intermission. They played, and I don't think these have survived, they played like a police scanner footage describing what was happening to the various characters throughout the theater, even in the bathroom. So you'd go into the bathroom and you'd hear, it's flying a plane over the, you know.
Yeah, that's really clever.
That's cute. Yes, the song was nominated. Any other guesses?
Editing?
Yes.
Yeah, sometimes long movies get an editing Oscar nomination. Let's see.
Which I feel like they shouldn't, because
cinematography color.
Correct. Ooh. That is what it was called then.
Costume design color?
No.
Just thinking of other categories that were divided by color and black and white. Production design?
No.
I don't know.
Cinematography color, film editing, music score substantially original.
Okay.
Song, as you mentioned, and sound. It won sound effects. This is the first winner of an Academy Award for Best Sound Effects.
Great.
That was year one. That was its only win. And it went 0-2 at the Globes, where it was nominated for Best Musical or Comedy. Jonathan Winters was nominated for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy.
Deserved. Jonathan Winters is so great in this. Him riding that little bicycle is the funniest thing.
I think he'd probably be the MVP if Ethel Merman weren't around.
Okay, can't handle Ethel
Merman. Oh, my God.
Hilarious.
No.
It is a problem for me, because this movie, it's like you have two modes of womanhood. One is nag. Well, there's three modes. One is nag. One is helpless, boring girl who wants to flee her life. Mm-hmm. And then there is Mary Beth in a bikini.
Yeah, the one who is just like, who's very seriously
angrily doing the twist.
Like, but you know what? I was here for that scene.
No, that was great.
Truly one of my favorite parts of the movie. And then also that guy whose name I can't remember, that actor.
Sylvester.
Yeah, Sylvester. Him driving and going, Mama, I'm coming!
Tears.
I think this movie's really funny.
No, I mean, I was surprised. I liked it much more than I thought I was going to.
I thought you were
going to
hate it, because you're always like, I don't really like slapstick, and this is
actually
all
it's not,
it is.
But it's a little more subdued slapstick.
Interesting.
It's not... These are fucking... Like, these people are legends for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
These comedians. And it's because, like... And I'm assuming there was, like, some sort of... There's a shift at this point in cinema and in comedy, in the art of it. And, you know, prior to this, slapstick was heavy, heavy as fuck, and just like literally in your face. And then there, at some point, they started to like, let's just bring it down just a couple notches. We're just going to bring it down a little bit. And these people were like, you know, just like the scene with where Don Knotts is in the car. And you know they're driving, and then he's like, he just does this like this really subtle thing. It's slapsticky, but it's like the subtle thing when he just like raises slightly out of his out of the driver's seat. He's like, I don't think I should be in here, and the guy yells at him, and he just gets back down and does his you know knots thing. But it's like, I like my hats off to all of these comedians, because they know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, then they are legends for a reason.
And Jonathan Winters hulking out in that gas station. Mm-hmm. And then slapstick, like, first of all, he just does a great job in that scene. But then, like, the Bugs Bunny of leaving a hole in the wall in the shape of a man. Like, I'm sorry. That's funny to me.
Dick Sean, which is sounds like someone's mad at me, played Sylvester. He's one of those people, and I think this is really what's lost to us now. he's one of those people who was kind of just generally a funny guy and was around in the culture. Like, he has plenty of film and TV credits, but none of them are like, he starred in The Thing. Right. It's just like...
He's like the Kevin James of the
1960s. Yeah. Yeah, like that. Because for the longest time, I was thinking for a second that he was Frankie Avalon.
Oh, sure.
Or Frankie Valli, one of those...
No, I think you're thinking of Frankie Avalon.
Teen Angel from Greece. Teen Angel.
Frankie Avalon.
Yeah. That's, right? I thought it was him.
No,
yeah.
Well,
whatever.
Just because I'm staring at his Wikipedia, he filled in for the vacationing Johnny Carson on occasion, including on January 1st, 1971, for the broadcast, which contained the broadcast of the final cigarette commercial on American television.
Oh, that's interesting.
One aired in the final minute before the cigarette commercial ad went into
what effect. Year was that?
1971.
Really? That's the 1971 is the last time I saw
TV ads. You could see like billboard ads and stuff, but
I always feel like that. I have like a memory of they were the Marlboro Man.
maybe if he just rode the horse and never smoked, maybe that was it. I don't know.
And also like Camel, Joe Cool.
Yeah, but I think you're like animating in your brain billboard ads, magazine ads,
maybe.
By the way, that dancing girl, Mary Beth in a bikini, as you said, I forget where I saw this. I believe she's the only surviving member of the cast.
Oh, good.
So, thanks for hanging around.
What? Doing the twist. Good for your health.
She's so serious.
Did I have another fact? This is about where I saw it. There are dozens of stories of cameos and roles that were pitched or suggested or somebody was supposed to, but they couldn't figure it out. I would have added a full 5 points if they had pulled off the planned ending. Just some one-liner they were going to figure out later for Groucho Marx as the doctor when was going to walk in, make some quip, credits. And that they just couldn't quite pull it off.
I thought that this was around the time of Golden Hollywood where like a lot of these actors were all in the same studio and they were like contractually obligated to do these things.
I think
you're here already. Like, so come on.
I'm pretty sure this is after the studio system, right?
Yes.
It's at least waning days.
Yeah.
I think that this is one of, and this is partially based on my journey through the special features. Mm-hmm. It's one of those huge casts where people start calling their buddies.
Gotcha.
Right? Like, you know, Milton Berle calls you and he's like, hello, hi, it's me, Mr. Television. You're going to do this movie.
I forget what I had heard. Yeah, and again, one of those, you know, somebody was supposed to do this role, blah, 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 but he wanted too much money. And then Spencer Tracy was like, I'll do it.
Because he had done a bunch of movies with Stanley Kramer, right? Mm-hmm. Spencer Tracy?
Yes, I don't know. That is correct.
Okay.
Spencer Tracy, is he famous for like more gangster films? Or?
No. He did all those movies with Katharine Hepburn, like those rom-com-y type movies.
All right.
And then he won two Oscars back to back. One for Captain's Courageous, where he gets halved, and one one called Boys Town, which I've never seen, but it's the He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother.
That's where that comes from.
And those were both more serious movies. Or Captain's Courageous is like a high seas adventure with seriousness. And he did Inherit the Wind.
Yes. Now that I'm on the Wikipedia.
Okay, page. Yeah. mostly a serious actor. Oh, and Judgment at Nuremberg, which was Stanley Kramer's movie before this.
Okay. Yeah, I think I enjoyed his character the most just because of like the subtle breakdown that
twist. I don't know. I really do like that plot move.
Yeah.
Where
he's
like, fuck it.
And right. Yeah. Because you see like him just like, okay, you see starting to see the cracks.
Right.
And the phone call where he's got two receivers.
So, okay, that's, I will say, going back to the Ethel Merman thing, like, it is annoying that the women are so shrill in this, but the two receivers bit, that plays off really
Listen to your mother. Listen to your mother. But another one, like, I am familiar with Ethel Merman's name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever seen her in anything.
I am also not sure I've ever seen her in anything.
She's a cameo in Airplane.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yes.
She looked like the woman from Sunset Boulevard, as who I thought she was at first. Mm-hmm. But like, that's just too much. Like, she's just yelling the whole time.
Also, her fucking bangles, which I will say, one of the special features was the AFI 100 Years, 100 Laughs segment about this movie, which was quite long and quite illuminating. But one of the things that they talked about was Milton Berle's scalp got cut open.
Oh, snap.
By her bangles during a stunt.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And he's like, I had to get a whole bunch of stitches. And they annoyed me the entire movie. So I was like, yep.
I think she was hilarious.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I know. I recognize how much of a cliche it is. But if you play a cliche well enough.
Sure.
I just thought she was brilliant. Now, I greatly admired this film. I liked it and I laughed at it. Mm. I did get bogged down in not just the length, but the repetitiveness of it.
Sure.
There are so many key bits where they cut to what is essentially the same shot or the same thing happening.
Right.
8 times.
The fireworks scene.
They're in that basement for so long. But the one that was getting me was the plane. There's got to be 18 shots.
That's a, we spent this much money on it. We're going to get our money's worth out of it.
But even, and I love the, going through the billboard is unbelievable.
Really cool.
That's really, and going through the hangar. But there are so many, there's got to be 18 shots of Buddy Hackett and Mickey Rooney going, whoa, dive, what? Just, it's like, we don't need to hit that every single, and there are whole threads like the guys in the control tower.
I love the guys in the control tower.
Didn't really do it for me. I liked the guy a little bit who was trying to explain how to be calm and then freaked out immediately.
Yeah.
But, and that, cameos have changed. I think Marvel has spoiled us to indicate that when someone is a surprising cameo in a film that they will do something.
Yeah.
Whereas here, I was waiting for the Three Stooges to come back for an hour.
I fucking love that it's just like, and there they are. Goodbye.
Yep.
I like,
and they put them in the opening credits. That's what's so funny to me. The 45-minute opening credits. Well, because of course you did. They list hundreds of actors.
Yeah.
And then they keep doing wacky things because it's what's his face?
Saul Bass.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's like the fifth or sixth run of also starring where it says the Three Stooges. And then at the very end, it says, and a few surprises.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, who is left?
Right. How many more surprises?
Jerry Lewis was one of Jerry the Lewis surprises.
I mean, the Wikipedia page lists 40 people that it counts as an uncredited cameo.
Okay.
And we just haven't heard of most of
them. Sure.
Jack Benny, Paul Birch, John Clark, Stanley Clements, Minta Dufresne, James Flavin, Nicholas Georgiad, Stacey Harris, Don C. Harvey, Alan Jenkins. Maybe these people were famous at the time, okay, and maybe not. But it is great that it is a great visual gag that there's all this chaos and the ones waiting calmly to help the situation are the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a funny gag. But because they were in the opening credits, I was like, this plane's going to get on the ground and then we're going to get a mini Stooges short out of it. And
I also expected that.
And with Buster Keaton, I was like, he's going to move around in a Buster Keaton fashion. Yeah. But then I thought he was going to, you know,
do something.
Yeah.
That was another thing from that AFI segment was David Alan Greer talking about seeing it as a kid. And he was talking about how he was losing his mind and this is the greatest movie I've ever seen. And he's like, I turned to my brother and I said, this movie has everybody but the Three Stooges. And then the Three Stooges popped up. That's so sweet and
it
cute. That segment also has Janine Garofalo very adorably trying to cover for not really knowing what the movie is. She's like, big comedy, big cast.
It had just that 60s wacky comedy. You know what I mean? Like when there was, I call it door slamming comedy. Like it's like crazy. It's bonkers. Like everything's happening and it's just silly and it's filled, the cast is giant, filled with every character actor of the day. And they're on some kind of goofy quest. Everybody's, and there's misunderstandings.
Like she's right.
Yeah.
She's like, and then she's like, you don't really do this anymore. And that was like 99-2000. And then I mentioned this in our group chat, but I'll say for our audience, it also has Whoopi Goldberg. Mm-hmm. And she's like,
I love Mad Men, Mad Men World. I don't know who you would cast it with today.
And I'm like, at the time, you had to at least
had
be
some
in
conversations.
Talks for Rat Race.
So when did Rat Race come out?
2001.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right? So, like, I feel
filming
like
this in
maybe
99.
She was like, wink, wink.
Yeah, maybe.
Or we suggested maybe she, like, filmed that interview and was like, no, what?
Right. Now that I think about
Let's make some phone calls.
Because is she one of the main characters in? Mm-hmm. Okay, so she's not just a cameo.
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know. I saw that movie once. I don't.
There are no really main characters.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's not. Yeah. It's not. She's not a Three Stooges situation. No, she's one of the cars.
Right. Yeah. She comes back again and again. It does keep you on your toes because I feel like every time it's a mad world does, not Rat Race, which let's as we said, if you like that one, like I did, leave it alone. Probably don't revisit.
Yeah.
Nowhere more so than the beginning of the film, because they sing a song with 14 endings, and then the credits go on for 12 minutes, and then a car immediately flies off a cliff. It's like, why? We didn't get warmed up here. There's so many times when I was like, I can look at my phone for a minute.
And then a plane crashes.
Exactly. Yeah. It does have a pleasantly, like, anything could happen at any moment feel. It's just, do we still count it as a climax when it lasts for an hour?
Right.
Yeah.
Because like, between the time they saw the W and the time they're in the hospital, so much happens.
So much. And it's like, this is definitely a couple movies. Or like this, this is a whole season of a television show.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, like this, I would watch this, enjoy it as such.
There was a TV show. It's one of those shows that I feel like I'm the only person on earth who remembers. And now I'm like, what was it called? I want to say it was called Drive, which was all the cars are on a race. Like each car, I think Emma Stone was in it. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't.
I promise you this exists.
You didn't make it up.
Yeah. I think it was like a Tim Minor show.
CW?
Network TV.
Tim Minor, 4 episodes aired.
Yep.
Oh.
2 unaired episodes were later released directly to digital distribution in 2007. Yeah, Emma Stone, Nathan Fillion. It had a real cast. This is a real film that aired on the Fox Network.
Real show.
Okay. Yeah. It's good. I admire it. I would watch it again. I would probably watch the long version, particularly
in the
theater.
I'm going to watch the long version at some point.
It's just, there's a lot. It is exhausting. And I definitely sat down for the length of a full movie, watched that much of it, went about an entire day, came back at the end of the day and watched another full length movie worth of content because that's how long it is. And it worked for me. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I really admire what's happening here in pulling all these things together and making such a grand movie on a grand scale.
Yeah, it is chaotic. But it's still at the same time easy to follow.
I'm really glad you didn't hate this, Camila. No,
yeah, me too.
Because I was watching it and enjoying it. And I'm like, poor Camila.
Well, at first I thought like when he kicked the bucket, literally, I was like, okay.
Here we are. Now I know what I'm in for.
And then I think it was the negotiation scene.
Yeah.
When they're trying to like split the money evenly.
Weird runner about Sid Caesar's character being weirdly good at arithmetic.
Right. All right.
That was good.
So I was like, all right, you know, I relaxed a little bit. It's like, this might be okay.
I don't know. Just say 73. I go 73.
Okay.
Like a lot about it. Just, I want to see the 1 hour and 58 minute cut.
Right.
I want to see the, no, really, we have to get this done on a plane.
So here's the thing. My score is obviously too high because of youthful nostalgia. I do not really recommend that anyone watch this unless you particularly like slapsticky movies. Mm-hmm. But I will say that if you have fond memories of this and then we're like, I assume this doesn't hold up. It holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm going to go 80.
Oh, wow. I thought I was being generous with 63. Like I said, I didn't hate it. There was a lot that I enjoyed about it. I would recommend it if you have a bunch of time to kill and on a Sunday and it's raining outside, you got shit else to do. Like, and if it's not, watch it. Because I think most people would enjoy it at least one time through. I will never watch it again because I don't have that kind of time. But
really, we all gave this the same score. I gave it a 73. Robin gave it a 73 plus 7 for youthful nostalgia. And Camila gave it a 73 minus 10 for she doesn't like old things. So you adjust the handicaps there. And
we were like, yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah. 72 is the average score. That's good. That's perfectly respectable.
I'm very happy.
Do you want to put in more of the trailer?
There was a certain amount of money buried down in this park.
There's only one way to figure it, and that is every man for himself.
And so begins the maddest, wildest, zaniest chase ever filmed as our merrymakers race across country by land, by sea, by air. For somewhere there's a fortune in buried treasure. Which one of our Mad World comedy stars will be the first to reach it? The world's critics go stark raving mad, mad, mad. The wildest chase comedy on record, raved the New York Journal-American.
Nobody's going to get me up in the air.
A smash. Has more laughs than any other comedy in the history of the screen, raved the Los Angeles Herald-Examiner.
Help! Help! Benji, say something!
Everything you've heard is true. It's the biggest entertainment that ever hit the screen with laughter. It's a mad, 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 mad world is everything its extravagant title suggests, says the New York Times. A wham-doodle, humdinger, stemwinder, said the New York World Telegram and Sun. Everyone who's ever been funny is in it.
Our traffic is so congested. Mass confusion on wheels. Get off the shelf and enjoy yourself. It's a mad.
All I have to say about the trailer is it's long, but also, it sold it. You know, it made me want to see the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I did appreciate that it has some of the all the best parts of the movie are in it. Like, yeah. You know, I mean, but listen, if you fly a plane through a billboard, you're going to want that.
What are you
going to
do?
Right?
Mm-hmm. What are you
gonna do? Yeah. I didn't know how to feel because the Wikipedia makes it clear that the guy, the stunt pilot who did that, did die during a crash, but it was way later.
Oh, okay. Oh,
so it's like, oh, did he? Oh. Oh, well, that's still sad. So I'm glad it wasn't this one.
You run into the Ford v Ferrari problem of if you make a movie about him, do you include that crash? Because it's a bummer and it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. I thought it was dumb in Ford v Ferrari. I thought title card it.
I don't remember Ford v Ferrari.
The Christian Bale character, they're real people. Yeah. And he died in a car crash years after the events of the film. And they include a scene at the end where, like, he dies in a horrible car crash and his son watches and it sucks. And it's like, it's a very lighthearted
like
movie up till then. Yeah. And it's like, why did you do this?
Yeah.
Like, just put in a title card.
Right. Like,
why are you ending your lighthearted romp on this huge bummer? I know it's reality, but you don't need to depict it this way.
Did we talk about this on the podcast? Because I think it's worse when that doesn't happen.
Really?
There's that Sam Rockwell movie about the lawyer sister. Any of this ring a bell?
Mm-mm.
There was some awards bait movie that didn't take off with, I think it's Hilary Swank or someone.
Oh,
very
sure.
Hilary Swankish.
Yeah.
And Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, I vaguely remember this movie existing.
Her brother was in prison for a crime she didn't commit, so she literally became
a lawyer
to get him and succeeded.
Right.
And then fucker like was trying to climb over a wall and fell and hit his head like a month after he got out of jail and died. And they didn't put that in the movie. And then like you do, because it's now you Google it and you go, wait a minute, she did all of that. And it was literally like it would have taken him 10 more minutes to walk around this big thing. But he was like, I'm not doing that. You waited in jail for years.
I'm going to counterpoint. I did not see this movie and I probably won't unless there's an episode of this had Oscar buzz about
I
it.
Would.
And even then. But that has thematic implications, like you just said, like she did all that. Right. Race car driver drives in car crash does not really have thematic implications in Ford v Ferrari. Similarly, like American Sniper, that movie sucks start to finish, but the guy got murdered. I don't need to see it. That's not what this story is about. This story is about him murdering.
But even like with the Hilary Swank bit, like even she did all that for him
put that in the movie.
Right. So I would say that was a good choice because for like the 50% of the population who does not Google that story, that's they're left with, okay, great. A good feeling sort of at the end of this movie. But the rest of us who will Google the story and are like, this motherfucker?
Yeah.
Like, so.
The name of the film was Conviction from 2010. Did we ever say it? 72. 72 is the score. That was the trailer. The Letterboxd list was most frustrating titles to say in conversation.
Yeah.
That was another thing from the AFI segment is that lots of people, including people who were in the film, said way too many mads.
Mad, 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 mad world.
Yeah, I just been referring to it as a mad world.
Yeah.
Add as many as you want.
I like to call it it's a mad, 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 mad because that feels right. So to the bingo card, we definitely have character gets killed right after a monologue.
Yes.
All right. I would count Taxi immediately arrives.
Yeah. Yep, 100%.
It feels like it's one final score.
Okay, so that is one I thought about, but who's one final score?
Spencer Tracy.
It's his first score.
But it sure is final.
But I feel like it could be final in the fact of, like, this is last hurrah. You know, like, he's already given up on his job and his life.
Yeah, that's true. Listen.
This will be the thing that...
You are the supreme judge.
One final score gets it.
All right.
Don't quite...
Fuck. I'm still one away.
I don't quite... Unless someone said that they should be out looking for the...
No.
I don't think so.
No, I'm not quite there. Well then, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Robin, what you watching?
Can we talk about Elvis?
I watched Elvis.
I saw that you watched Elvis on Letterboxd, and also that you had similar, I don't know how to feel about this. because like I weirdly loved Elvis, but also I think it is ultimately like a bad, a capital B bad movie.
Yeah, like I don't... know what it was that made me enjoy. I would like to credit the score or the soundtrack.
I love their use of contemporary music. Yes, that was great.
I think that's what pushed me over the edge of like, okay, I can rock with this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But the dude playing Elvis, also he did a really great job of playing Elvis.
Well, that's the thing. I find that guy, if you just look at him, I'm like, you are not attractive enough to play Elvis.
Exactly.
And, like, I was, like, mad about it, but he really does the work.
He does the work really well.
And he does enough of, I'm kind of a cipher for pop culture. Like, you know, like, Elvis is whoever we project onto Elvis. Mm. He did not do the, I'm going to play you like a real man, Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln thing.
Right.
And I think that would have been the wrong choice if an actor did that. I like that he's a little hollow.
Well, he's like, I Googled a lot of, I looked on YouTube at a lot of those clips that he was doing, a lot of those performances and stuff. Dude was fucking spot on.
And then that was the thing, is that the thing he pulled off, which I never thought really anyone could do, was convincingly make every girl drop their panties.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right, because they really hit that hard in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, a little bit too hard. Like, the movie's way too long, and if you cut out half of the shots of women and then the couple shots of men being, like, lust.
Right, yeah.
It would have been a lot shorter.
Did you know people wanted to fuck Elvis? Yes.
Yeah, I think
that's
that was
his thing.
That's
kind of the whole thing.
That was his thing.
But that's the thing, is that Austin Butler pulled it off, which I never thought he'd be able to. Although, at the very end, when they show clips of real Elvis, I'm like, oh no, yeah, real Elvis was much more handsome.
Like, bro, when the real one showed up, I was like, damn.
He was so handsome. Like, it's like, you remember that Austin Butler's not actually attractive enough, but who is?
Right. I was like, yeah, he was really, because, you know, I mean, I've seen photos of Elvis, but I just don't, you know, it's not a normal, it's not just an everyday thing, but seeing that shot, that first shot of him.
It was just like, holy shit.
Yeah, he would have gotten it. Like,
particularly young Elvis,
which
starts to raise the question, if that guy that looked like that had been playing fucking reggae, would you know, like, is rock and roll... Is the existence of rock and roll a product of how hot Elvis was?
The existence of rock and roll is a mainstream embraced by white people thing, you mean?
Yeah,
maybe.
I think so.
I think someone would, if rock is too strong, it will never die.
Right.
Some white man would have come along. Also, the very beginning when he says, and he's white. White.
That's the thing. He's white.
He's white.
Yeah. It's so funny and so bad and so great all at once.
That was like another thing. Like, I was trying to figure out, I was like, what is Boz trying to say here?
I don't
with a lot of the stuff, with a lot of the things like showing up, because I don't know how much of this is real.
Yeah.
Like, where Elvis is concerned, and I don't care enough.
Yeah.
But like, just like putting him in the actual, like, you know, predominantly black neighborhoods, and that he's actually going to black churches and
they
hanging out.
They hit it a little hard. They're very much like, black people love him.
Right, but that's what I was confused. I was trying to figure out if Boz is saying that this was his norm. Like, this is, of course he sounded like this. Of course he did this because of this. Or it's like, well, he was in the proximity, so that's why he was able to, like, snatch it up with the way he could. So, and I know that I did read some stuff that Little Richard actually was friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
The person who plays Little Richard in this movie is also insanely hot.
I was like, insanely hot. Yeah, and I was like, I don't remember Richard. Like, I don't like Little Richard. I've never seen him like that.
He looks
like your grandma getting made up for church.
Right. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's just weird.
Then they cast this model.
Right.
Right.
It's like,
but whatever. I was like, I will look at this gorgeous human. I think, Camila, that they were trying to absolve Elvis of appropriation and put the guilt all on
the black people he was around.
No. On Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
I think that they were saying
clearly the villain
that Elvis grew up with this. This is he wasn't like actively like steal black culture.
Right.
He just was reproducing the culture that he grew up
with.
He
was the conduit.
And then it was Tom Hanks and also just the music industry in general that was like,
what? Yeah, basically, but, because, you know, they weren't trying to give that same voice and spotlight to black artists.
Exactly.
I didn't know that. What's his name? Colonel? Colonel?
I always want to call him Colonel Potter, but that's MASH.
I always assumed he was a Southern man because of the name. I had no idea.
Listen,
he wanted you to assume that.
Tom Hanks. Ultimately, what I put in my Letterboxd review was that Tom Hanks is the Russell Crowe of American Gangster of Elvis.
Right.
This movie does not need that character. At some point, it feels like there was a draft about Colonel Potter, whatever the hell his name is,
and
Elvis would have been like periphery character.
Yeah.
And whatever, if you want to make that movie, go make that movie. But then at some point, they were like, no, let's make an Elvis biopic. And it's like the carcass of the Tom Hanks movie is like awkwardly carried on the shoulders of like, listen, I know everybody's tired of straightforward music biopics, but if you're going to make one, make it about Elvis, right? Make it a Baz Luhrmann about Elvis. Like, I just feel like if this had been a traditional movie about Elvis, it would have been so much more successful.
Yeah. I look at it as what was like a 2.5 hour music video, which I am totally good with.
Which, like
because that's Baz. And I think the only other Baz Luhrmann film that I really enjoyed was Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet's the best. Yeah. You know, like Bohemian Rhapsody is also a bad movie, but like when I saw it in the theater, I was like, I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
Because I treated it like watching a music video. And then like the periodic bad scenes of like I'm gonna emote through my teeth, whatever, they're fine, you know. It's just like, okay, I'll get through this, and then there'll be another great music scene.
I think a lot of the musical biopics, when I watch them, like Bohemian Rhapsody, I enjoyed it a lot, and I haven't even thought about if it's a good movie or a bad movie, but because of dude's performance as
Rami Malek,
as Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I usually base it upon. And this, like, all right, how great are you channeling this artist?
Yeah.
And I thought he did amazing. Like, he was really good at what he did.
I think Freddie Mercury is a good comparison because, like, one of the big problems is I'm like, you're not really attractive enough for this. And then
was Freddie Mercury attractive?
He was to me.
Because I always saw it for his drummer when I.
Okay. Yeah. But the fake teeth were so bad.
They were, but wait,
that's one more thing I wanted to say about Elvis, which is I don't like their fat suit choices. I mean, like, I don't like fat suits, period, but it is a problem to me.
Check back with Brendan Fraser in a few months.
I don't even want to talk about it. I really hope I don't have to watch that movie. And honestly,
I don't have to. He's going to win.
I'm going
to
watch. Why would you not watch?
Because I don't like fat suits, and I don't like, oh my God, this person weighs 600 pounds. How horrible, right? It just sounds like it's going to be really fat and dehumanizing and unpleasant, and we'll talk about it if and when I do have to watch it, but I hope I don't. Fat suits, they're bad. Putting Tom Hanks in a fat suit and then not putting Austin Butler in a fat suit until the very last scene, which they only show through a video filter, really bothers me, because Elvis was fat. And that is okay.
Well, they show, you know, a little bit of like a late Austin Butler playing a very late a sweaty Elvis performance.
Right.
And then they show video of a sweaty Elvis performance, and he's huge. But we saw Austin Butler not huge 25 minutes ago.
Right, they gave him a very light fat suit for one scene.
Right.
And it just really feels like they're underscoring that in the minds of the filmmakers, being fat is sad and or evil. Mm. And it's like, oh, the downfall of Elvis. He became fat. I'm like, that is not the downfall we need to be sad about.
What I was sad about is that dude never got a chance to perform outside of the United States.
Like, that is very sad for the rest of the world.
Right, if that's the truth.
For him, I guess.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, so basically, like, dude was just on lockdown in Vegas for 30 years. Like, yeah. There's just
not
so much.
Not 30 years,
well,
he died.
Well, yeah. Well, like, but like, you know. There's just so much about him that I don't actually know. Because, like, Elvis is, like, a caricature in my...
And then I also, like, I don't think I understood how young Elvis was.
Right.
Like, I didn't understand he was, like, a teenager when he became famous.
Exactly.
And then early 40s when he died. Like,
exactly.
I looked it up. He was, like, 42?
Yeah. It was early 40s.
Right. Definitely. So, anyway, like, Colin was like, what is the comparison? I'm like, it's like if Britney Spears died.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that would be... Yeah. Horrible and shocking and such an incredible loss.
Right.
And I guess I just, you know, Elvis has always been dead in my lifetime. So we're in all of our lifetimes.
Right,
and
yeah.
So I feel
Ooh,
like
now
I,
you got a horror movie. Elvis has always been dead.
Ooh. anyway, it really was like one of the first times I considered like what I lost or what we as a culture mm-hmm. lost from Elvis dying young. Anyway, like the movie, it's bad.
I liked it, but I don't know. I've been generous lately. The one thing I'm repeatedly hearing, because my dad said the same thing to me, is that it's playing on one of your HBO channels every 12 minutes, and it's on HBO Max. Mm-hmm. I keep hearing people say, I threw it on, and I was really enjoying it, regardless of whether or not it's a good movie. I think you're going to enjoy it if you didn't see it in the theaters and you put it on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's definitely enjoyable, just for the, like I said, the music alone. For me, anyway.
But hey, while you're there, watch Chadwick Boseman play James Brown in Get On Up. Because Rami Malek wins, this kid's going to get nominated and maybe win.
I doubt it.
Chadwick should have been
I don't
recognized for Get On Up because that one was great.
I don't think this kid's getting nominated.
I think that was because a majority of our culture really respect James Brown for what he was.
Which is terrible.
For what he is. Speaking of... And ironically, I don't remember if he's alive or not.
He is not.
He died on Christmas. I just know he's on the list of people who died on Christmas. Like, what, 15 years ago? Something like that.
That long ago?
Yeah.
Robin, you anything other than Elvis?
I feel like there was something. Speaking of watching movies in the wrong aspect ratio, et cetera, I watched the movie Sounder, which was nominated for Best Picture in 1972.
All right, then.
Cecily Tyson's in it.
Yeah,
and,
I saw that when I was a kid.
Well, right, yeah. And I have an Oscars quest. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Actor. The version that has been on Tubi for years is like really low quality 3:4 aspect ratio, which is wrong. And I was like,
Tubi.
And I was like, I'm waiting for the real one. But then that aspect ratio popped up on Amazon Prime. And I was like, this might be the only thing that I'll ever get the chance to see.
Right.
And so I was like, I'm going to watch it. And you know what? It is great. But I will say, probably partially affected by watching in the wrong aspect ratio, it really feels like a TV movie. It's one of those. It's like, this feels like a long episode of television.
If I'm in the right mood, that's all I want.
But
this can be really good.
This is exactly what I was going to say. That being said, I enjoyed it so much. And then also, you know, I've heard of this movie since I was a child. Never knew until the first 3 minutes of it being on that Sounder is the name of their dog.
Oh.
Yeah.
And Rosebud is the sled.
And also, the dog gets hurt but does not die.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. What did I see recently where the dog didn't make it? And it's like, oh, we didn't need to. I got to check the website. I've just been watching things and liking them. I don't know if I'm in a good mood. I was on vacation, maybe because vacation was coming up, but Clerks 3, liked it.
I forgot that exists.
It's out right now in a weird 5-day only release because Kevin Smith's, you know, he's his own movie studio and doesn't care, which honestly, good for him.
I mean,
sometimes when people do that, that's pretentious. But if he's like, I'm just going to show this in the way I want and not bother. Great.
Fine.
It's pretty good. Like, you know, inevitably 30 to 40 minutes of it is in jokes and references, and you know, mm-hmm. because those movies are so self-reflective, but the rest is like exactly what it should be. It's about, you know, these guys are like in their 50s now and confronting mortality and their health and having to be serious about life in some way, because they're, no matter how Gen X they are, they, you know, they're getting old, and it works.
That sounds like a bummer.
It is a bummer. It's definitely a bummer, and it's funny at times, but it's absolutely a serious, somber look at aging with Dante and Randall. They're taxed a little bit beyond their means. Those two could never act and were just the guys who were around Kevin Smith 30 years ago, and asking them to emote is a bit of a challenge. Yeah. But no, there's a lot of funny stuff, and I kind of liked it. I liked Pinocchio. No one else did, but I liked...
Why does it exist?
Right.
Disney live action reimaginings. We gotta catch them all, apparently.
Also, I heard it has a different ending. Does he not become a real boy?
Oh, that's dark.
Yeah.
No, he does. They just kind of like leave that, like he's walking off into the distance and becomes a real boy. It's not like a big grand he's a boy now.
Okay.
As with all Disney live action reimaginings, why are you writing new songs? The songs sound different when you put them beside songs from 80 years ago.
Yes.
But I don't know. It's Robert Zemeckis who, you know, has certainly made some not great movies, but like is smart enough as a filmmaker to like just do, oh, I do Disney magic on this one. Got it. Mm-hmm. And just makes it. Cynthia Erivo's the blue fairy and she's gorgeous and sings well and great. Yeah. Sure. Fine. Watch it. It's fine. At any given time, I'm either like, all movies suck or all movies are good. Shut up. Have fun. The one I'm pretty sure was really good was Barbarian.
I saw a tweet, I think it was from Linda Holmes, which was one of those many horror movies that's essentially a remake of an X-Files episode. And I correctly guessed which one.
Did you read the Wikipedia
summary? Of course. Because I was like, I wonder which one. I have a guess. And then I went and read it and I was like, I guessed correctly.
This was the first time in a theater I thought, man, Robin's going to love this Wikipedia summary. Because it's firmly in the category where I'm not telling you to watch it. But
sure, I won't unless it gets pulled up on this.
And yeah, it's the number one movie in America this week. The best thing about it is how unpredictable it is. They did the rare thing that did a good job in the marketing, very solidly obscuring what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So the whole time you do not know where the movie is going next. When you get to the end and look back, there are little holes. Like it's not a 10 out of 10, but because it's suspenseful and you don't know what's going to happen next, it's a great experience and a great in theater experience.
Is that what you saw in the Nicole Kidman theater?
Yeah, I sent Robin a video from the theater because it was the most gorgeous AMC Dolby Cinema I had ever seen. We're at Disney Springs. Mm. Famously, no new movies are coming out right now. So even Barbarian gets a week in the Dolby Cinema. And this was the largest auditorium I've ever seen with one of the largest screens I've ever seen and the full Dolby sound and everything. It had a full stadium seating balcony.
Oh, wow.
Not like a little art house. Oh, there's a balcony with a few. The balcony was on top of the projection booth. So like you took, I think there was an elevator involved up until like four more like big luxury lounger rows above the projection booth, which probably, I mean, I'm not going to say I would like Transformers in there because that's a lie, but I would like most things.
Avatar
if you present,
2, The Way of Water.
I would love Avatar 2, The Way of Water.
Camila, what did you watch?
I liked all those things. You know what I didn't like? The Blob. Watch The Blob.
Like from the 50s?
Yeah.
The original one? Okay.
The Blob just got restored. It's showing all over the place right now. And
how's that Blob looking?
The Blob looks fine. It's everything that isn't the goddamn Blob. The Blob looks all right, but this is one of those sci-fi movies where the actual threat appears on screen for all of about 8 minutes, and otherwise it's just a bunch of 40-year-old teenagers running around going, we gotta tell people there's something in the town. Between this and Papillon, I still don't understand why Steve McQueen was such a big deal.
Was he in The Blob?
He's the lead in the blob. And even like we saw it at the Harris, and I love the Harris, everything they do. It's too late. I should have plugged it last time. But Saturday night, I'll be hosting the Three Stooges Festival at the Harris Theater. Very excited. Of all the stuff I do, this is the only one where I've gotten multiple like interview requests that I did not pursue myself.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Like where people are like, can we talk to you about Three Stooges Fest? Yes, you can. And the first thing I said was like, I'm not making a joke. I really feel I've done things right in my career if I was approached to host Three Stooges Fest. I'm sorry. Speaking I cut off of, Camila to complain about the blob.
I saw, in addition to Elvis, Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul.
How was it?
If you think you're going in for a comedy, you'd be half right.
Okay.
So it's much more drama.
It's like a serious, like, here's what's wrong with the church kind of situation.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. So
that is hard to make a full-on comedy about.
Well, yeah. And that's just like, I mean, all of their advertisements have been like really heavy. It's like, oh, this is going to be like a mockumentary. It's going to be hilarious, which, you know, there are points that it's funny, but it's also like, oh, we're going to be doing some thinking. A lot of soul searching for those who are like really into the church. Regina Hall. Like she's amazing. Like she just goes from this comedy straight to this like really heartbreaking dramatic scene where it's just like, wow, like why is it she needs to be in more things all
Support the
time.
Support the Girls is on, I think, Netflix right now or Hulu. Mm-hmm. Watch it. It's so good.
Support the Girls.
Yeah, it's Regina Hall runs a Hooters.
Oh, nice.
So Support the Girls is a, and it's not called a Hooters, and her like catchphrase is, it's a mainstream bar and grill.
Yes, I will absolutely
it's
watch
so
that.
So good.
If you remember last year's Oscars, they had 3+ hosts. Mm. No one remembers anyone other than Chris Rock now, obviously, but there were 3 hosts.
He was not one of the hosts. The hosts were Amy Schumer, Regina Hall. Right, and Wanda Sykes.
Yes. Every time I thought about that leading up to it, I got confused as to whether Regina Hall or Regina King was actually the host. And now I just want both of them.
It's extra
They'd both be great.
Right. It's extra confusing because Regina King was the pretend host.
Was the pretend host the year before.
The year before. Also, yeah. Regina Hall, Regina King, born 1 month apart.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yes.
Well, both of them.
She's hilarious. They're both hilarious. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. They're both assets to entertainment.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, if you do watch Honk for Jesus on Peacock, don't expect just to be straight comedy.
Yes.
Because I've seen a lot of church folk that are just really complaining about
it. Yeah.
They're,
that's got to be hard if you think you're going in for something light. And then,
you have to
expose the dark underbelly of an important part of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Let's put on the shining spotlight. Let's right there.
Just tell me whether or not to watch it because I'm right on the fence. And I'm never like looking for extra stuff to watch, but I keep seeing it pop up on Peacock. I'm like, should I commit to Honk for Jesus?
I don't know that it would be fulfilling to you.
Okay.
Not having any sort of connection, I assume, with the Black Baptist Church.
Went to one once.
Yeah.
You might, but yeah.
This one time.
Yeah,
because I also have a this one time. I feel like a lot of white people have a one time I went to a Black church and I was like, what?
My main takeaway was we were in there for 3 hours. It still felt faster than a Catholic mass.
Everything feels faster than a Catholic mass.
Anyway.
I don't know. You might just adjust your expectations.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like a hoot and a holla. Mm-hmm. I saw Thor. Love and Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
I rewatched it with Colin. Again, while I'm watching it, I enjoy it.
I rewatched it with Mary Beth just the other day, in fact.
I mean, it was fine.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It's a very fine movie. It's no Ragnarok. But it's better than the other two Thors.
Mm.
There's a lot of stuff in there. Well, at least the first Thor. I don't really remember a lot. But
the second Thor is, to me, the worst one, regardless.
Yeah, either way. But your whole thing of like, why are we kidnapping kids? Like, what's the point of that whole thing? And I agree. But then we get the scene where the kids are fucking kicking ass. And I'm like, if this is all it was for, like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
If somebody was just like, we need to have a scene of like kids splitting demons with jump ropes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and it's also a little too close to home because it's like, you know, kids are fucking crazy.
The one who's just melting them with the stuffed animal's eyes.
Yeah. And they're just screaming. Ah, it's like,
I'm glad that movie happened because now we'd never need a Guns N' Roses biopic.
Dude.
This was the Guns N' Roses biopic.
Yeah. That was my other thing. I was like, why are we swinging so hard off Guns N' Roses?
I don't know.
Dick? Like, why?
But every time I was like, this is the right song for this scene.
I do appreciate that they picked the right part of November Rain.
Yeah.
Which that's the part that I fast forward to. Like, who's listening to the first half?
That was my wedding recessional.
Really?
Yes.
Nice. Gore, Christian Bale's so good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's another thing. I also felt like Christian Bale was in a different movie. Like, he was...
Yeah.
Christian Bale came to work.
But that's, like, Christian Bale's way of being.
Yeah.
But But it's like, I don't know. It was just like really, the rest of the movie kind of felt a little telenovela.
Yeah.
For a while. But the scene where they go into the Shadowland and it turns monochrome and, mm-hmm. you know, Christian Bale is really acting his ass off. And I'm, mm-hmm. yeah, I was there for it. And who invited them?
What? I've never heard of this.
It is a movie that I found on, was it Shudder?
About this, for the audience at home, this is the part where we all pick up our phones to be like, what are you talking about?
Hey, follow us on Letterboxd, everybody. I'm just Sean Collier. Robin?
Hitchdied. H-I-T-C-H-D-I-E-D.
I am Rugged Angel.
Mm-hmm.
One word. It's about these people who have a party. This couple has a party, a housewarming party, and then like these two random guests who claim to be their neighbors show up. And then they won't leave. They just like kind of ingratiate themselves into them. And at first it's all fun and good, but then they find out, you know, there's a twist and turn here and there. And I don't want to like give too much away. But mm-hmm. the main guy, and I forget, he is a fucking terrible actor.
Ryan Hansen? Perhaps?
Yes, he's fucking awful.
Oh, from Veronica Mars.
Is he?
Yeah, Dick Casablancas.
Okay, because I know him
Blonde guy?
Yeah, yep. I know him from A Million Little Things, and he played like a hockey mm-hmm. player. And that's the only time I've ever seen him in action. And I thought for sure, like he plays like a Bruins hockey player. Mm-hmm. And I thought for sure, I was like, this guy has got to be a real athlete because he's so bad.
Act.
Right, because he's so bad. This guy's actually from the Bruins, right?
And I always get the vibe he's just playing himself and himself is a total douche.
Yeah, he wasn't too far from the Million Little Things character in this movie. But
he was also on Party Down, also playing the same character. He just, so I think that's just who he is.
Anyway, the two people playing the villains, they do a fantastic job. Okay. And they're the ones that are basically carrying the movie. And I think, is it a lot of gore? Not a lot of gore, so you might be okay watching it. Yeah, it's mostly a psychological mm-hmm. thriller.
Listen, you and I can make a lot of progress. I don't think that extends to getting Robin to subscribe to Shudder.
But I would recommend it. It was good.
Those are some movies you should watch. Here's a movie we're going to watch, and it's spooky. It's time. We are now drawing from the Halloween appropriate subset of the master list, a little under 200 horror films. To recap, there are no vetoes. Nobody has any veto going
there
into spooky
no
season.
Vetoes.
So, look. It can go a lot of ways. I know it sounds exciting. Listen, we did like an Urban Legend sequel and an Annabelle prequel, and anything can happen here. So just harden your hearts.
My heart is so hard.
We're going to do three of these. The first one is one that I have not seen, which is tough to do in this genre. Going back to 1993's The Good Son.
Yes!
Hey, I think Camila's happy.
I'm interested to see if I have seen this. I know I've seen the end of it.
But I am
not sure I've ever seen the whole thing.
It's my little put-em, Elijah Wood.
This is my question for you going in. The horror vacuum occasionally sucks up psychological thrillers where it's not really. Is this a horror movie?
Yeah. I would probably say that's probably straddling the line between the two. It's probably leaning a little more towards psychological thriller, but there are some horrific instances that do happen.
Okay. You're going to be, it's suitably creepy to begin our spooky season special.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm going to watch along with this because we were talking about TV movies. I bought a set that might be from Vinegar Syndrome, now that I think of it, called Televised Terror, which was three almost entirely forgotten TV horror movies.
Cool.
And one of them was, I think it's called Child in the Night from 1990, the first starring role from Elijah Wood.
Huh.
First starring role. What was he, four? Because, like, he was the star of North, and he was, like,
very little.
Very little.
North, the original I hated this movie.
Damn, girl.
It aired on...
not me, Roger Ebert.
Oh.
Yes.
Aired on CBS during May sweeps in 1990, Child of the Night, starring Elijah Wood and Tom Skerritt. I haven't watched it yet.
I am intrigued. And it's funny, because I just started watching season 10 of American Horror Story, and Macaulay mm-hmm. Culkin is in that.
Oh.
This is great. I haven't seen it. It's interesting. No one seems dismayed. All right. Spooky season. Before we flash forward 30 years to the release of The Good Son, we're counting Christmas of 1963, since that was the first time.
Was it a Christmas song?
No.
Oh, that would have been
Christmas
too
of
easy.
1963.
I don't think there's any way to get this, because I had vaguely heard of this person in the back of my mind, but it's almost like a novelty hit.
Lulu?
No. It's not Christmas, but it is. There is a religious tie.
Son of a preacher man?
No.
You said it's a novelty hit. Did the artist do anything else? Is the artist someone whose name we'd know?
I don't think so. I think people barely knew her name at the time.
Her
name.
Because she kind of performed under a title.
What?
If I were a Sally Field TV show, I would be
a flying nun.
And if instead of flying, there was something else,
the singing nun is a thing that I have heard of and know nothing more about.
It's the singing nun.
What?
The name of the song is Dominique. You know it because it's the song that they played over and over again in the room, in the common room in American Horror Story Asylum.
Oh shit!
Yeah, like Dominique. Dominique, wow. By the singing nun was number one. Then I go to her Wikipedia. Okay. And she was an actual nun. Everyone liked her singing. Somehow this led to, you know, an album, a couple singles. Eventually she gets disillusioned. She leaves the sisterhood. Tries to continue her career, but the church won't let her perform as the singing nun because she left, right? Even though she's still faithful and she still acts like
so
a nun.
She should be like the singing apostate.
She was like Sister Songs or something. No, that sounds like R&B. Anyway, she can't get her career going again. She's left the church. She has all of these financial troubles. She moves in with her lifelong best friend.
Uh-huh.
Puts out a statement about how she rejects that. That's not, apparently, when she made the statement, it was true. Then later it wasn't anymore. Yep. Like she did the whole thing. They get together. Finances keep falling apart. Eventually they kill themselves together. Where's this movie?
Right? I was going to say, there's what? Your number one movie.
And what? Right there. The question is, are they going to show that scene or are they going to make it
a
title?
They gotta show the scene. Because they left instructions for their Catholic burial together as
yes.
church leaving lesbian lovers.
That's what
it's
they should
call
so the movie.
Good. This is very sad, I'm sure. DJ had a tragic life. Where's the movie?
Yes. How is this just a thing that nobody is? Okay.
Hollywood, give us a call. Number one.